This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 306 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Wow, Max, we've switched time zones, and boy, I don't do well with this. You know, not switching time zones, but going back to central, to normal time instead of daylight savings time. I'm tired tonight, but we've got a really good show.
We do. It's dark outside and it's raining, but hey, here we are indoors where it's nice and warm and cozy and we can talk about drones.
Well, I guess I could fly mine, but we'll go from there. But we've got UAV properly tested, automated emergency safe landing technology. What if a delivery drone falls on your head? UK drone operators and the end of November to register. Singapore mandates unmanned registration and a bunch of other stories. So I guess with that, Max, we should get started. What do you think?
All right, David, let's get started.
This is from satellitetoday.com. Are UAVs properly tested or is development rushed? This is an interesting article about whether we've properly integrated drones and we've rushed them. I don't know, Max. What do you think? Have we rushed them, considering we've been talking about this almost 5 years now?
It certainly doesn't feel like it's been rushed. But what they're talking about here, they're kind of exploring a little bit from the satellite-based drone connectivity standpoint. This, of course, is coming from satellitetoday.com. So that's the perspective that they have. And when they look at that kind of connectivity, there's a number of issues associated with drones. And I think they're pointing out that these are kind of some big issues. And there's a lot of pressure to get product developed and out, and is the balance proper? But in terms of the issues, they talk about things like, well, the antennas needed to be pointed at the satellites all the time. The antenna, the modem, it takes up a lot of space and power and weight. And with drones, you have to maintain connectivity at all times. You can't drift away from the satellite when you're using that as your connectivity basis. Satellite data is expensive, and if you're creating a lot of data, high volumes of data, say for high resolution videos or pictures or something like that, you're going to generate a lot of data, and that gets very, very expensive. So the author here is pointing out that all of this development is pretty complex. And again, there's a lot of pressure to deliver. So I don't know if they're really making a strong argument here, just raising some of the issues. But I guess it's worth thinking about in terms of the pace of development. And, you know, are we rushing or are we moving at a good pace?
Well, I guess my question to you is, you're the connectivity expert because of that other podcast you do with Mary Kirby. Does the industry, you know, connectivity for in-flight entertainment purposes, does that seem rushed? Do they take two steps forward, one steps back, or do they seem to be methodically solving the problems?
I think the latter. I think the methodical problem solving is more the approach. And especially with unmanned aircraft, it just feels like there are other items that are pacing the entire industry, you know, more than these connectivity issues that are raised in this article. I mean, we've talked endlessly about the challenges of creating the regulatory framework for integrating unmanned aircraft into the national airspace system, all of those things, the liability, we'll talk about that coming up. These other things seem to be more the pacing items when it comes to, you know, are we going too fast?
Agreed. So why don't we, I think we've paced enough on this article. Why don't we move on to the next one, which is automated emergency safe landing technology. And this is from UAVexpertnews.com. Ironically, Max, I thought it was kind of interesting that this popped up in our feed after when we did Airplane Geeks this week. We spent talking about automatically landing SR-22s, and here now we're talking about automatically landing UASs.
Yeah, it came up twice in 1 week, but from completely different angles. And this is something that Black Swift Technologies has been working on. They call it Swift STL. STL standing for safe to land. So it's Swift Safe to Land. And it's a technology that's been developed under a NASA grant. And the idea here is that, let's say you've got some kind of a catastrophic in-flight failure on an unmanned aircraft. Well, you would really like to have some kind of a system that can take over. And that's what this does. It captures and segments images, and then it autonomously identifies a safe place to land, which is pretty cool.
This is one of those issues we talk about with delivery, where what happens if you do have a failure? Where do you put it down? How, if you're flying beyond visual line of sight and you lose contact, what all of those issues that are involved, this is an interesting aspect that we need to pursue more because it's for safe operations. It's being tested, and it was done by a grant by NASA. It's got learning algorithms, otherwise known as AI. So it learns by doing, though hopefully it doesn't, you don't lose your drone that much, so it has to learn, but it's self-teaching. And you know, we're getting closer and closer to automation, and where the drones are going to start protecting themselves. And you don't want to lose all of the data, or, you know, if you're doing surveying, or God forbid a package or whatever. But we, you know, of course, if it's a choice between human life and the drone, it's always going to be human life.
Yeah. And we've certainly talked about return to home technology. So that if the comlink is lost, the drone returns home. And then in the case where there's some kind of other failure, you know, we talked about drones that automatically land, but where Black Swift Technologies, BST, is taking this is sort of one step further and saying, okay, we need to land now, but that doesn't mean just drop straight down and land on whatever we're over. You want to land in some place safe. Now, they have a white paper that describes this, and it's not too terribly long. It's not a bad read. It's called AI and Machine Learning's Role in Enabling Automated Emergency Safe Landings of UAS, a Key Enabler for Safe Beyond Visible Line of Sight Flights.
I always like white papers where the title is longer than the actual paper itself.
I know, it's a really long title. But here's there's a summary, or part of a summary, that kind of gives you a flavor for, or a feel for, what this is about. Let me just read from this. It says, fundamental to this advanced functionality is the development of onboard machine semantic segmentation on an integrated small form factor hardware platform to identify obstacles like people or buildings or vehicles, structures, that could impede finding a viable, safe landing area. Semantic segmentation is a branch of machine vision that allows objects to be classified at the pixel level by assigning each pixel to a class label. This is a more complex solution than merely assigning an object to a class. A key differentiator to BST's solution is its ability to collect and process massive amounts of data that a human alone could not, to quickly make emergency landing decision. It's notable that this is a hardware and software solution. So they're talking about some kind of a board, I guess, that would contain the hardware that would be used for these calculations, of course, along with the software. I don't know if this is proprietary now. I mean, since it had NASA funding, maybe it's not proprietary, but it seems like something that would have applicability to a lot of applications.
And drone delivery is one of them. And I like the fact that it's trying to make decisions on even a more granular level than just that's an object, not land near it. That's an object that, yeah, I can get to the right-hand side and land of. So it's very in-depth. But what happens if that fails and it lands on your head? Well, that's what happens on the next story. What if delivery drone falls on your head? The thorny legal questions as services increase. This is from thetelegraphherald.com. And these are those legal questions that we get, you know, what do you do now? When? ...
Yes, the article looks at a couple of those. And really, I think these are for the most part issues that we've talked about in the past. But the first of all, is a drone trespassing if it flies low over your house? Is that your space? Is the drone allowed to take pictures of you as it goes by? And who is liable if the drone malfunctions and falls on your head, as they say? Like I say, I think we've kind of addressed a lot of these as to who owns the airspace. You read the article and it sounds like, well, you know, people kind of don't all agree on who owns the airspace. I think if you ask the FAA, I think they know who owns the airspace.
Yeah, I would say it's the NAS is owned by the FAA. And privacy, we've talked about all the time. But on liability, that's interesting. I can talk about this now because I'm no longer in that industry. But who's responsible? You know, will you be able to sue the pilot? Will you be able to sue the manufacturer of the drone? Will you be able to sue the company that's using the drone as delivery? All of that will have to be shaken out in case law. Who is ultimately responsible? So usually if a UPS truck hits somebody, UPS and the driver get sued. So it's going to be interesting. So if you're a pilot working in a, you know, get insurance.
Oh yeah. You don't want to be a service provider in this industry or really any industry without having adequate insurance coverage. Because you know who gets sued. Whoever has the most money gets sued, and then a bunch of other people as well, if you can sweep them into it. That's the way it seems to work. I don't know if it's a whole lot different than other industries. I mean, like you say, what if a UPS truck drives off the road and crashes into your house? Whether it's a UPS truck that crashes into your house or a drone that falls out of the sky and drops through your skylight into your living room, I think it's pretty clear who's going to be liable for it. You know, it's going to rise to the party with the most money. But I guess it is an issue. And maybe the point of the article is that some of these things still need to shake out. And even in cases where, like, who owns the airspace in the United States anyway, we kind of know the answer to that question. It's not so well established in the minds of many other people.
And if the FAA owns the airspace, does that also mean that they're responsible should something fall out of the airspace?
Nope.
Really?
Yeah. No, because if an airliner goes down or when we have a crash, the FAA is not liable for that.
Yeah, but if we talk about the 737 MAX, there's a lot of liability coming out and blame going to the FAA on that set. So
that's blame though, but liability, the FAA is not going to pay any money for that, you know?
Okay, we're recording this on we're releasing this on November 8th, 2019. So there is approximately 30 days left, or excuse me, 22 days left to November 30th, 2019 to register your drones in the United Kingdom, or you'll get a fine as much as £1,000.
That's right. Now, registration doesn't cost much, only £9, but all drone operators and owners in the UK have to register drones that weigh more than 250 grams. And in addition, besides just simply registering them, if you fly a drone over 250 grams, then you're required to take an online educational course and test in order to receive a flyer ID. And registration is open. You can register as a drone operator or as a flyer now at register-drones.caa.co.uk.
Unless you're going to run out and buy a Mavic Mini, which is 249 grams. So, which is, we having a conversation in the office today with one of the engineers from previously that worked with Bell. And he's actually looking at that, and he thought it was very interesting about the whole 249 grams issue, you know, and not 250. So interesting there. Evidently, 250 grams must be the standard for all of the globe, at least right now. So
now there's a companion item that goes along with this, and that's about this also in the UK. Drones Reunited, that sort of leverages this registration process.
Isn't there a song about that? Reunited, and it feels so good.
I guess.
26% of drone owners say they've lost a drone. Drones United UK will use the new UK drone registration program to help them reconnect with their lost drones. They'll use the unique code that must be applied to the drones. So registration, and, you know, as some, though I question, some people who lose a drone probably don't want some but other people to find it.
Well, I don't know if, you know, if you've got a $1,000 drone and it takes off someplace or doesn't come back or goes over the forest and drops down somewhere where you can't find it, you know, you'd love to, love to get it back. So what they're doing through this system is that you can either report a drone that you have lost, or you can, if you found a drone, you can report that. And if all these drones over 250 grams have registration numbers on them, then it's a simple matter of figuring out who owns that drone. And so this Drones Reunited website is a place where you can recover your drone. Or if you find one, you can say, hey, I found a drone. A couple of years ago, we found a drone. I don't know if you remember this, David. This is, we were driving through the neighborhood, and on the side of the road was a small drone sitting in the grass by the side of the road, which somebody comes to, or it turns out, had, you know, flown it over the trees and lost sight of it and didn't know where it was. Drone Mama had put a post in Facebook saying, hey, I found this drone. And sure enough, the teenager who lost the drone saw that on Facebook. And so we reunited him with his drone.
You're always ahead of time. You know, you are always on the bleeding edge of technology.
Facebook, huh?
But that brings us to an interesting stat in this article, which was that 51% of the lost drones were due to battery loss, poor signal, or technology failures, versus 25%, which is what were a pilot error. So that's an interesting statistic that, you know, more of them are failing because of issues with the craft over issues with the piloting.
And another thing that came out of that little survey that they took was that they had a pretty high favorability rate for the registration requirement. In fact, 44% thought that being able to track and find lost drones made the whole idea of registering your drones a little more palatable. So they saw it as a real benefit for the this drone registration. So, yeah, it sounds good. And, you know, for £9, it's almost like insurance, you know, for if you lose your drone and somebody finds it for £9, there's a good chance that you may get it back.
Absolutely. But let's go spanning the globe to bring to the constant variety of registrations. Singapore mandates unmanned aircraft registration effective January 2nd, 2020. The Civil Aviation Authority of Singapore, or CAAS, will require unmanned aircraft over 250 grams again to be registered before it can be operated.
And again, here you get a registration number. A sticker goes on the drone on each unmanned aircraft. I think that was kind of interesting that the terminology used here was not drone, was not UAV, is unmanned aircraft, any unmanned aircraft. The CAAS says that the users will have until April to complete the registration. So you've got a little bit of time. But I don't know if you're familiar with Singapore. In the past years, I've spent a lot of time in Singapore, which is a beautiful, beautiful city, just a marvelous place to visit. But they have very strict, well, everything is very strict. It's a very ordered society. You don't want to find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Singapore. And so in line with that, the penalty for flying an unregistered unmanned aircraft is pretty significant.
10,000 Singaporean dollars, which in U.S. dollars is 7,371, and jailed up to 6 months or both. Wow. Yeah, I think, Max, register the drone. It's cheaper.
They tend not to give you special
dispensation
for first time offenders or anything like that. Usually in Singapore, the penalty's the penalty. You better plan on that. And this registration requirement, it actually comes from a advisory panel that the government had created and which submitted proposals in August a couple of months ago. And that's what the panel recommended, and that's what the government went ahead and implemented in Singapore.
In all fairness, it does make sort of sense. Singapore is not a large, I mean, it's a city state. It's not a very large area, you know, it's a very crowded area. So flying an illegal drone could be possibly hazardous to somebody. So I can understand why the stiffer penalties there. UPS makes first home prescription deliveries for CVS. This was from Reuters. CVS and UPS announced the first commercial delivery of prescription medication by drones to customers. Well, it wasn't to me, Max.
Me either. But this is the UPS Flight Forward drones. And they made a couple of deliveries. They delivered one prescription to the front lawn of a private home, and they also made a delivery to a retirement center. They landed in a common area or an open area at this retirement center and made a delivery there as well.
So again, it seems like medication's like the way to go. That'll be the first thing to be delivered on a regular basis by UASs. So congratulations to CVS and UPS. I guess that means FedEx will be working with Rite Aid or Walgreens, given competition in this universe.
And the delivery method was what we've been seeing elsewhere. It seems like everyone has settled on the idea of hovering the drone over the target and then lowering the package. In this case, that's exactly what they did. The drone hovered about 20 feet up and lowered the package. And in this case, they were about the size of a small shoebox. So we are talking about small objects being delivered in these drone delivery programs, and not particularly heavy, But I guess that's to be expected and where things will start. And I wonder if, you know, we'll progress to larger drones that have greater payload capabilities and see, you know, heavier objects being delivered in the future. I suspect we will, as long as these small delivery trials are successful.
Well, our last story comes from ZDNet.com. UK government funds 18 projects to develop anti-drone technologies. Well, the UK is trying to get ahead of everybody else because they've had as far as drone technology goes, they've had the biggest impact because we've had Gatwick and Heathrow closed for various reasons due to drones, you know, and we had the protests earlier at Heathrow where it was pre-planned, but they used counter UAS, CAUAS systems to prevent the protesters from disrupting the airport. So big story. Anything interesting, Max, in this story that you wanted to run across?
Well, a couple of things. One is, you know, how did this come about and how were the 18 projects selected? And this started back in April of this year, the Defense and Security Accelerator Program, DASA, D-A-S-A. This was under the UK Ministry of Defense. They asked the private sector to come up with some new technologies that could detect approaching drones and neutralize the threat. And so a number of people responded to that, and the UK government selected these 18 of them, approved £2 million to fund them. Now, what does fund them mean? Well, this happens in two phases. The first phase is what happens next. The participants have until next summer, the summer of 2020, to develop proof of concept designs. And then in a following phase, the approved projects will take these proof of concept designs and take them to some live environments. But the projects, you can see all 18 of them in the article that we'll have linked to in the show notes. But, you know, wide variety of participants, Northrop Grumman, Plex Tech Services, BAE Systems, Animal Dynamics, Thales is in there, a wide variety of organizations. Projects include things like to develop interception technology, developing electromagnetic defeat of UAS. Northumbria University is looking at a project to develop anti-swarm drone technology. Another project is develop a hard kill, quote unquote, for disrupting the UAV's onboard electronics. So it's a wide variety of pretty interesting projects. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the proof of concept completion of this. I guess we have to wait till next summer in order to see that, but those should be quite interesting developments to take a look at then. And I don't know how many will be funded beyond that, but at least they're starting with these 18.
And we'll have the list in our show notes. So I guess with that, Max, and we're already previewing the summer of 2020, maybe we should wrap this up. What do you think? It's getting kind of chilly out and I'm tired.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's the UAVDigest.com/306.
And of course, you can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/UAVDigest. On our Twitter account, which is at UAV Digest. You can become part of our Slack listener team. And if you listen every week, you know how to do that. You send us an email to feedback@theUAVDigest. And we'll be happy to let you join the club and see all of that other the fun stuff that goes on the rest of the week when you're not listening to this show. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we'd like you to tell your friends about the show. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.